welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering shows from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark LeVunier, and in this hour, sci-fi. Later on, we hear the snowball effect on X-1, but right now, a one-off story from writer Pierre Gerson, it's Flying Saucers. And although UFOs still hold interest today, this story was broadcast pretty much at the height of the UFO craze. From August 30th, 1950, on the Mutual Broadcasting System, it's 2000+.
Alone in a room 100,000 miles from Earth. My body lay dead before me, and yet I spoke and felt and lived. Behind me lay a tortured world. Before me, the moon and destiny. Again, I felt the surge of power, and had I been able to, I would have smiled. My mission was accomplished. No one knew, no one understood. If they had, they would not believe. This was a project 3,000 years old, yet no one had guessed. No one.
Listen now to 2000+. Adventures into the world of tomorrow. Science fiction stories from the years beyond 2000 AD. Today, a story entitled The Flying Saucers. It is the year 2000+12. A blazing New Mexico sun shines down upon a great military installation, upon a vast, noisy field, and upon a silvery shape which seems to strain forward, ready to leap up into space. In an executive office, a man sits in his chair, his eyes on the great rocket. Behind him, a girl waits for him to speak.
Better close that window, Eileen. The noise won't let a man think.
Yes, sir.
Ah, that's better.
I'm ready, Dr. Bronson.
Get this on tape as well as in shorthand. It's for the permanent files in Washington. It's got to go out in the next jet. I'll give you a signed sheet of stationery. Send it off to make the 5 o'clock connection. You got that?
Yes, sir. Recorder on. The letter to be transcribed over your signature and sent off on the 5 o'clock connecting plane.
Right. Heading, top secret. 2, National Scientific Council. Copies to Joint Chiefs of Staff, Secretary of Defense, the President. From Andrew Bronson. Forget the usual string of titles, Eileen. Chief Department of Extraterrestrial Research, White Sands, New Mexico. Regarding defense measures against aerial visitors listed in file AA-286 as flying saucers. 1. For the past 3 months, this secret experimental installation has been visited by flying saucers. First appearance coincided with the launching of our secret flying missile, Zeus. Details in reports CB-286, A, B, and C. 2. Although the flying saucers have never landed, the frequency of their visits has tripled since the launching. As reported in the files cited, Zeus has not yet returned. 3. In view of the importance to national security of this secret installation and its experiments, the reports already mentioned were reviewed by JCS and the National Scientific Council. It was decided that the flying saucers were a potential menace and that countermeasures be undertaken. 4. Zeus 2, an improved model of our secret flying missile, has been completed and armed. It is equipped with mass attraction and proximity fuse devices. Warhead contains 5,000 pounds hexenite. Firing control automatic. See file CB-344. Five. The station has been placed in condition alert. Next visit from the flying saucers is expected momentarily. In view of the foregoing, we are in complete readiness. We will attack. Repeat. We will attack. Ah, where's my pen?
Andrew.
Ah, this one doesn't work.
Oh, I'll get it. I saw your pen in your vest.
Don't touch that vest. I'll get it myself.
Did I do something wrong?
No. You might have been hurt.
Hurt?
Oh, never mind. There you are, my signature. Now, on your way.
Andrew, why can't I stay?
You know the orders, Eileen. We're going to test Zeus, too. You know anything can happen. Maybe the flying saucers will come back. If they do, we'll be ready for them. Besides, if the rudder should go wrong or the hexenite detonate... No. On your way now. The jet car's waiting downstairs.
Oh, very well. But you will be careful, won't you?
Of course. Eileen.
Yes?
I've never told you...
Yes?
Never mind. Au revoir, my dear. Au revoir, my darling. Dr. Bronson to security. Come in, security.
Security, aye.
Has Miss Harkness phoned in yet?
No, sir.
Well, that's funny. I expected it to after sending off the latest reports. She should be home now. Are you sure?
Yes, sir.
Now, something must have happened to her. Send a security officer to check. What about the setup for the new test?
All righty, sir.
Oh, that's good. I hope nothing happens. Any report of flying saucers?
No, sir, not yet. But, sir, there's something funny about that. Every time we get ready for a test, even one of the minor missiles... One of the saucers appears. That's too much of a coincidence for comfort, sir.
Yes, I thought of that, too. You think there's a leak somewhere?
Yes, we've checked and rechecked. Nothing. But there's no doubt that someone's passing out information.
I see.
Of course, we'll keep on checking. Whoever is responsible...
Dr. Bronson. Radar control to Dr. Bronson.
Bronson here. What is it?
Flying saucer detected and registered. Computation center fed data. Data follows. Distance, 486 miles. Height, 50.2 miles. Speed, 5 miles per second. Estimated time of arrival at contact point, 1:58 from now.
One over. 1:58, right. Alert fire control.
Fire control alerted, sir. But when may we expect you?
In 30 seconds. Over and off. Are you still on security?
Aye, sir.
Clear the field.
Field already cleared. I've just sent emergency red signal. We're waiting in control, sir.
Very well. I'm coming down right now. Over and off. Let me have my headset and hand mic, Scotty.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Bronson to fire control.
Fire control to Bronson. Everything ready here, Chief. Dolly's cleared from Zeus 2. Warhead armed.
Well done. Bronson to computation.
Computation.
Your figures checked through cybernetics?
Yes, sir. As reported, Zeus 2 should destroy flying saucers 6 seconds after blastoff. Firing time, 2:33:36.
Time check, everyone. Time is now... 32 seconds to blast off. Condition red. I shall operate fire control remote. Strap in for firing. Security.
Security, aye.
Report.
Field cleared, guards alerted and shielded, anti-radiation up, warhead armed, Zeus 2 ready. Any further instructions?
10 seconds.
9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2... 1, fire! Get a bearing on that trajectory computation.
Trajectory established and being fed EMAC. Trajectory correct, sir. Parabolic sound reflectors receiving. Contact 2233-42,
red on the nose. Good work, everyone. Security.
Security, aye.
Condition green. Well, boys, now to wait till someone phones in where the pieces fell. And then maybe we'll be finally knowing what the flying saucers are. Has security located Eileen Harkness?
No, sir, not yet. Captain McDonald is here, sir. He has a man with him, says you should see him immediately.
Well, all right, bring him in. Yes, what is it?
McDonald thought you'd like to hear this, sir. This is Al Waters, a rancher from upstate. He flew down from his ranch this morning and reported to the state police. They sent him to us.
The saucer?
Yes, sir.
Where is it, Mr. Waters, the wreck?
Wreck? I didn't see no wreck, Doc.
What did you see?
I seen a flying saucer come down about half a mile from my ranch house. Saw it this morning when I was going after a lost calf.
He swears the saucer's undamaged, Dr. Bronson.
Huh. Well, it may not be the one we... You flew down, Mr. Waters?
Yep, got my own jet plane.
Well, can you take me up with you to your ranch, I mean?
Sure can. Glad to.
All right, we'll leave immediately. Scotty, you round up the crew, everyone. Have them load everything we need on the transport, the big job. When can I expect you?
Give us 2 hours, sir.
All right. Now, Mr. Waters, let's get to your ranch.
There's the flying saucer, Doc.
Where?
You see them two peaks? That plateau between them, you see it? There, now the sun's hit it.
It is undamaged.
I'm putting her down.
Did you see any signs of life? Anything moving?
No, sir. Of course, I didn't get too close. I might leery the thing.
I understand. It's just as well you didn't.
Hey, wait till she stops rolling, Doc. Sure are excited, ain't you?
I'm afraid so. Even scientists get excited sometimes. Here.
Sure is big, ain't she?
Yes. Must be over 300 feet in diameter. Now, there's an airlock.
Hey, you ain't going in.
Was that round door open when you first saw this?
I don't know. I don't remember. If you're going in, Doc, I'm going with you.
Well, thank you.
It'll be safer. There's two of us. You ain't got a gun?
No.
I'm glad I got mine, then. Never can tell what you'll bump into. Don't you think you ought to wait for the rest of your gang?
I can't. I've got to see what's in there.
Okay.
Watch your head.
Right.
Inner door is still closed. Let's hope it'll open. That will.
Look at that. Sure looks complicated, don't it?
This must be the control room. I can't wait to inspect
it. Ain't that another door over there?
Yes. You'd better stay here. Don't touch anything. I'll see if there's anyone still aboard.
Okay, Doc. Keep your eyes open.
A larger room. This must be the crew's quarters. There's no one here. Let's... What's that? I felt giddy for a second. Well, I'll take a look through it. Eileen. Eileen, wake up. Wake up. Unconscious. Eileen. Still unconscious. How did she get here? I've got to get a doctor. Waters, what are you doing at that control board?
If you look through the porthole, Dr. Bronson, you'll notice that we're miles up, still accelerating. We would have been higher if I hadn't to take such care with my takeoff.
Waters, are you crazy? Who are you? What are you taking me? Us?
You were right when you guessed that this is not the saucer you destroyed. It isn't. You were wrong when you said there was no crew on board. There is. You see, I am the crew. You should consider yourself very fortunate, Dr. Bronson. It's not everyone who can view the Earth from a distance of 100,000 miles.
You can put that gun away. Let me take care of Miss Harkness.
I've already assured you there's nothing wrong with her. Merely an advanced soporific. She'll recover quickly. Fact, here she is now.
Andrew.
Eileen, stay where you are. He has a gun.
Where are we? How did I get here?
I think you'd better sit down, Miss Harkness.
Who's he?
I don't know. He calls himself Waters.
Where are we? I looked out of a porthole.
Don't be frightened, Eileen. We're on a flying saucer.
A flying saucer?
Yes. How did you get here?
I don't know. I sent off the report, got into the car, and woke up here.
One of my operatives. I shall now engage the automatic controls, and the ship will fly itself until we get to the moon.
The moon?
Yes, that is our first stop. You see, fast as this saucer is, it would take us centuries to get to our ultimate destination. So we must transfer to a matter converter at our base on the moon, and we shall be in Kor almost instantly.
Kor? What are you talking about?
Perhaps a little explanation is due you. We Kor are the inhabitants of the solar system you know as Rigel.
But that's 500 light years away.
Exactly. Although the speed of what you Earthmen have been pleased to call our flying saucers is approximately that of light, even that speed would entail a round trip of 1,000 years. True, the Kor are almost immortal, but for efficiency's sake, we set up a matter converter to flash us, or rather I should say our operatives, through space, instantaneously. Our base is on the dark side of the moon. From there, we transship to the saucers.
But why? Why are you so interested in Earth? Why haven't you let us know? Sent representatives to the World Council?
One thing at a time, Dr. Bronson. I see you partake of your pulp writer's suspicions that we intend to take over the Earth. The truth is just the opposite. We want Earth left strictly alone for our research.
How can we believe that?
The truth is self-explanatory. We've been visiting the Earth for over 3,000 years.
3,000 years?
Yes, Miss Harkness.
But why? For what reason?
A very simple reason. Our interests differ from yours. Without research, we become bored. To spend eternity in boredom, well, we are primarily psychologists, social psychologists, while you were engrossed in a mechanical civilization. Of course, we fostered that development.
I still don't understand it.
I didn't expect you to. However, in every society, there are certain problems, shall I say, which can only be solved experimentally. We have used you humans in our experiments. It's been extremely interesting.
You mean you've been using us as guinea pigs, as experimental animals?
You may put it that way if you wish.
I still don't see how.
Through our operatives.
That's the third time you've mentioned operatives. What do you mean?
We Kor possess no body, as you know it. We are constructed of energy. In order for us to visit Earth, it was necessary for us to construct human bodies and to inhabit them. We thereupon had an operative who could go to work on Earth.
You couldn't have gotten away with it. Someone must have suspected
you. Exactly. There were a few suspicions. So we took the memory of life on Kor away from our operatives and landed them on Earth, complete with an Earth history. You may remember Alexander. Alexander the Great. He was one of our operatives. And François Villon, his task was to satirize his time and to lead the unrest which brought on the French Revolution. There we had another, Marat.
Villon, Marat. It's incredible.
Not at all. As one of your Earthmen, Emerson, said, an institution is the lengthened shadow of one man. We saw to it that the key men in each age were ours, our operatives. The problems they set Earth gave our scientists much material to work with. Enough for another few thousand years.
Then our inventions, our scientific advances were pushed on by you.
Yes, like giving an ape a stick to see what he will do with it.
Then our wars, our revolutions?
Naturally, wars and revolutions are part of the research. They're all part of the master plan. But don't forget, we fostered genius, too.
Why are you telling us all this?
Surely that must be clear even to you. You are perhaps the leading scientist in America, certainly the leading figure in the use of atomic power for extraterrestrial research, a key man. But doesn't that suggest something to you?
No. I can't believe it.
Certainly, my dear Bronson. You are one of our operatives. You've done your work, but your experiments have endangered our base on the moon. So it's time to transport you back to core. Ah, the signal. We are approaching our base. It will be a comfort to leave this unpleasant body and to resume my right.
Bronson, put down that hand. Here, put this handkerchief over your nose, Eileen. The gas will clear away in a moment. I think it's all right now. The full force was directed at this core.
Oh, what was it?
I had a gas pen in my vest, an idea which was originated after some of our scientists were kidnapped by the Eastern Alliance. Oh. I never thought I'd have to use it on something like this.
Is he dead?
No, he's merely unconscious for a few minutes. The gas is harmless. See if you can find something to put around his hands and feet while I see if I can operate the controls. We've got to get back to Earth.
All right, Andrew.
They won't believe our story, but they'll have to believe the ship.
I can't find anything to use.
You'd better hurry.
All right. Andrew.
What is it? We haven't much time.
I thought you said the gas was harmless.
Of course it is.
But this man isn't unconscious. He's dead.
Dead?
There's no pulse, no breathing, no heartbeat. Oh, Andrew.
Now get hold of yourself. I don't know how to... If it was his life or ours, Eileen...
I neglected to inform you that a core of the upper grades can leave his body as he pleases. I see that I underestimated you, Dr. Bronson. You saw immediately that my weakest point was the human body of which I complained. Very clever.
I can't move.
I need no futile arms and hands in this form. A core carries power. For a core is power.
I take it you will rid us of our bodies, too.
Precisely.
Isn't there anything... If we promise to forget, you can make us forget.
Unfortunately, the matter is out of my hands. My orders were to recall two operatives.
Two?
Yes. Miss Harkness was a psychometrist in her previous... incarnation? An excellent one, too, Draga, or Eileen, as you're now called.
But this is inhuman.
Precisely. I am not human.
Let Eileen go. I'll go with you gladly, but Eileen...
No, Andrew. Take me instead.
The answer is the same for both of you. No.
What kind of fiends are you? Isn't there one of you with pity? Just one who knows what we feel, who's felt the agony of the millions you've made your guinea pigs.
You're speaking of sympathy? No. Yes, I stand corrected. There was one, of course, who felt that strange emotion. Carter. An odd being, as I recall.
And I suppose you killed him?
No. A core being energy cannot be destroyed. We captured Carter and exiled him to your planet. An enormous task. He was one of our greatest scientists. That makes it all the more strange, you see. He wished to stop our experiment. Well, we lost track of him, but no matter. The unfit must go. That is the paramount law of nature. Enough of these digressions. It is time...
At least let me say goodbye.
A little time must elapse before I can build up the energy to free you of your body. You may have the time. Besides, it is a new experience to me. Most interesting.
Eileen, darling, it's too late now, but I want you to know I love you. I've loved you ever since you walked into my office 3 years ago.
And I love you, Andrew. I always have. I always will.
A very touching.
Don't be afraid, my darling.
This touching of lip to lip, very interesting. Energy is undoubtedly transmitted. Very well, Dr. Bronson. It is time.
No, take me first. Let him go.
Your emotion is senseless. I'm merely returning the two of you to your true being.
Oh, Andrew. My darling. My darling.
So this is your odd emotion called love? This should make an interesting report. A minor report, it is true, but...
You have done your work, O Loka. You have done your work too well.
You are not the operative I was sent for?
No. I am Kada, at last. But now with 2 centuries of power, power I learned on Earth, there is no core who can withstand me now. Sympathy is the ability to feel what others feel. How do you feel now, Loka?
I don't understand. Unscientific.
No. Say mercy. Say it.
Mercy.
There shall be changes on Kor. We must leave Earth alone to work out its destiny in its own way. Now, go to the converter and await me there. Draga. My Eileen.
Andrew, I...
Don't be afraid. The transition is painless. There is so much for us to do on Kor, so much to teach you.
Oh, Andrew, I can't. I'm so frightened.
Don't be me. Your power will soon be with me. For you too are Kor. What those fools didn't know, that emotion, too, is power. With your love and mine, we can right the wrongs Kor has done to Earth. There is eternity for both of us to spend together. Eileen. Draga. Kron.
I'm ready. My darling. Now.
And forever.
Next week on 2000 Plus, another dramatic story of unbelievable adventure, the story of a world of the past locked in the world of tomorrow. Time out of hand. Be sure to listen. 2000 Plus is produced and directed by Dreyer and Winolson Productions, Incorporated. In today's production, Ralph Bell portrayed Dr. Bronson, Louis Van Ruten was Waters, Bryna Rayburn was Eileen, Ken Williams was Scotty. The script was written by Pierre Gerson. The orchestra was conducted by Emerson Buckley, music composed by Elliot Jacoby, sound Walt Shaver and Adrian Penner, engineer Martin Enghauser. This is Ken Marvin speaking.
Plus on Tuned to Yesterday, a broadcast from August 30th, 1950 on the Mutual Broadcasting System. It's an hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. And now it's X-1 with a story penned by Catherine McLean, her first of two, heard on the series in 1956. We hear a broadcast from August 14th of that year on NBC, starring Ted Osborne, Wendell Holmes, Audrey Bloom, and Mary Patton, and the Snowball Effect.
Countdown for blastoff. X-5, 4, 3, 2... X-1, fire. Far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, Adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-
I took over the university at a time of crisis. For one thing, we had been placed on probation by the conference for overpaying football players by 100%, and one half of the varsity was penalized a year's eligibility. On top of that, I was called in by Mr. Harvey J. Glover of the Board of Trustees. We had lunch at 21 on his expense account, and after the Napoleon brandy, he lowered the boom.
Dr. Holloway, the university is in crisis.
I know, Mr. Glover, I know, but I'm assured that our scouts have turned up several likely zinc miners in Colorado. You can assure the board that we'll have a line to reckon with next season.
I'm not talking about football. There are other things at the university, I'm told.
Well, of course, of course.
Holloway, as president of the university, you've taken on a grave responsibility.
Oh, I know, I know.
I don't mind telling you the board has been gravely concerned. The number one problem facing us is academic freedom.
It is?
You're darn tooting. We want every academic department free from debt, running in the black. Is that clear?
Academic freedom, huh? I see.
Any faculty that can't support itself by grants, bequests, corporation, or government contracts is out.
All of them?
Down to the last assistant instructor. Look, Holloway, I'll put this to you straight. Most of the board was against hiring you. They had a bright young plant manager from General Products they said could show a profit from a candy store in the Mojave Desert. But I stood up for you.
Why, thank you, sir.
I told him the president of university has got to be at least a high school graduate or it doesn't look good. You know, you did graduate from high school, didn't you?
Oh, yes, yes. And college, too. I got my master's at Harvard and my doctorate at...
Never mind. Let's not go too far. Have you got this straight now?
Oh, yes, yes. I've got to make a profit on the candy store. I mean, the university.
That's right. Oh, and Holloway.
Yes?
How many zinc miners did you say we dug up?
I started in with anthropology, astronomy, astrophysics, agriculture. Almost all the departments could show a nice, healthy contract from the Department of Defense for research, or from some corporation. Even the classical wing came out okay. They were being subsidized by a pride of Texas millionaires who thought it was cute to have original Greek and Latin tombstones set in concrete on their patios. One fellow from Galveston gave a classical barbecue featuring a swimming pool with pornographic marbles from Pompeii set around the scum gutter. I ran into my first problem when I got to sociology. Now, look, Dr. Caswell, I'll be frank with you. I'm paid to make sure this institution doesn't come out on the short end of the stick.
Well, that's a quaint expression.
I got it from Mr. Grover of the Board of Trustees, so you can see this is no time for kidding ourselves. Can sociology pull its own weight? What is it?
Sociology is the study of social institutions.
Now, look, Caswell, to the Board of Trustees, sociology sounds like socialism, and nothing can sound worse than that. Come on now, what are you doing that's worth anything?
My dear sir...
And don't wrinkle your nostrils at me, Caswell. If you've allergies, take an antihistamine. If not, just answer my question.
This department's analysis of institutional accretion by the use of open system mathematics has been recognized as an outstanding and valuable contribution to...
Valuable in what way?
Well... Since the Depression, Washington has been using sociological studies of employment, labor, and standards of living as a basis for its general policy.
Please, please, Professor, stick to brass tacks and leave Washington out of this. What specifically has the work of this specific department done that would make it as worthy to receive money as, say, a heart research fund?
Fundamental research doesn't show immediate effects, Dr. Holloway, but the value is recognized.
Caswell, all the other departments have managed to squeak by. You're the last one. Unless you can toe the mark, there'll be 14 sociologists testing the institutional efficiency of unemployment insurance as an instrument of economic policy. Caswell knew I had him. Unless he could show me how his department could scratch a buck together, I'd have to expunge his name from the catalog and have him drummed out of the faculty club. I'll hand it to him, though.
He glared from behind his pince nez, and sliding into his lecture manner, he started his column.
Institutions, organizations, that is, have certain tendencies built into the way they happen to have been organized, which cause them to expand or contract without reference to the needs they were founded to serve. I have developed a form of socio-mathematics to prop these factors, and by comparing formulae...
Is it all perfectly clear to you? Well, it wasn't to me either. I grasped the idea that he could tell whether an organization would get bigger or smaller and why.
And so I asked him for proof.
Well, I could give you a demonstration.
How quickly?
6 months.
All right, let's see. We've got a basketball team averaging 7 feet. That ought to keep the board busy till spring. And after that, that bonus pitcher we stole from the Milwaukee Braves. All right, Caswell, you've got 6 months. I forgot about Caswell and sociology department for a couple of days while I went back to convincing semi-literate millionaires that they might as well leave a couple of millions to the university rather than have the federal snap it up in inheritance taxes. I was on to a real beaut, a button manufacturer with a bad heart who could go any minute, who wanted to endow a scholarship for needy and intellectually gifted lacrosse players. When Caswell came back to see me, we had lunch at the student cafeteria on my expense account. And he explained.
Ever hear of feedback effects?
Is it something to do with reducing overweight co-ed?
No. It's a mathematical term. You might call it the snowball effect.
You mean like rolling a snowball downhill?
That's right. It grows. Now, here's the mathematical symbol.
That spiral?
That's the formula for the general growth process. Do you understand the equation?
Why, no.
It accounts for all sorts of institutional growth. The Roman Empire, Alexander, the Masons, the spread of tobacco, anything. You see, when the snowball becomes too heavy for the cohesion strength of snow, it breaks apart. Now, we've decided to run the test on an organization and make it grow according to the formula.
I see. You're going to use some club or lodge or something as a guinea pig.
If you could follow the equation, you'd see I've built a pattern of a cogent reason for the ins to drag in new members from the outs, and an urgent factor to prevent anyone from resigning. That's this Greek symbol here. Kappa for compulsion.
I suggested a few changes in the organization plan, and we finally worked out a setup that was nice and simple. We put our heads closer together and tried to pick the best place for a demonstration.
It should be small enough to observe, and yet large enough to be statistically significant.
How about Passaic, New Jersey? My sister lives there.
Oh, let's make it Watershaw. I have some student sociological surveys of it already. We can pick a suitable group from that.
We've got to make this an ironclad demonstration. We'll have to pick some little two-foot nothing club that nobody would ever expect to grow. Some miserable, pathetic little organization. We found the perfect test guinea pig. The Watershaw Wednesday night sewing circle. Caswell and I drove over next Thursday night to a meeting. They always met Thursday night, except every once in a while when the chair lady forgot to have her hair set, in which case they met Friday.
Well, girls, ladies, girls, we have business to conduct, girls. Helen, please.
The regular meeting is now called to order.
Bernice.
Just a minute, dear. Will the secretary...
Bernice.
You're out of order, dear.
It's not a regular meeting.
But of course it is. It's Thursday, isn't it?
I distinctly remember when we had that special meeting on Tuesday for Toby's baby shower. We adjourned sine or die when she started to have pain.
Well, my goodness, it was forced labor. That certainly doesn't count.
But this meeting is just a continuation of the other one.
Oh. How do you feel, Toby?
Fine. A little out of breath.
Did you try a little dry toast just before climbing the stairs?
But, Bernice...
My doctor said to breathe deeply through my nose and to have Henry tie my shoes for me.
Well, I'd like to see Alfred tie anything for me. It's 3 years since I dared get a dress that zipped up the back.
Madam Chairman, I rise to a point of order.
Well, my goodness, Helen, you don't have to be a martyr about it.
That's the way the meeting of the Watershaw Sewing Circle went on. After a prolonged parliamentary battle, the point was finally carried that this was the tail end of a previously adjourned special meeting. At this point, the secretary, who had shorthand training, read the minutes.
It was moved by Harriet that a vote of confidence be registered in the administration of the club's business by Bernice. The motion was seconded by Elsie, who said she thought it was only fair because Bernice didn't even have an unlimited phone. And look at all the calls she had to make on club business. The motion was amended by Joan to include Bernice Calloway as well as Bernice Hackett, because with two Bernices, the whole thing would be confusing, and it didn't seem fair to discriminate between Bernices, because Bernice Calloway didn't have an unlimited phone either. And besides, her phone was way upstairs in the bedroom without even a kitchen extension. The motion was defeated because of the lack of a quorum.
Finally, the new business of the meeting was reached, and Bernice, introduced Professor Caswell and myself as observing professors doing a survey of charitable institutions. After the business meeting, brownies, sponge cake, and apricot peekaboo cookies were served with coffee. Caswell and I drew the unlimited Bernice aside.
You see, Mrs. Hackett, I've been making a few notes on a slightly modified constitution and bylaws for your organization.
You have?
You see, it all depends on having a competent and capable lady in charge.
Oh, yes. Yes,
frankly,
I see.
Frankly, this plan would be dangerous unless there was a woman of great character elected to the post of chairlady.
Well, of course.
You see, there are several ways of, well, influencing an election.
Oh.
That's why it's important that only the right people fully understand this.
Oh, you're right. Absolutely. Why, the organization was just floundering before the last election. Now, can I see those plans, Professor? They sound like they're just what we need.
Naturally, she was hooked. As Caswell buttered her up, her eyes began to gleam, and she studied the simple little bylaws and constitution the professor had drawn up, nodding happily as the classic beauty of the scheme struck home. The meeting broke up when, after four brownies and a wedge of butterscotch cashew angel food surprise, Toby started to have real labor pains. We found out later it was a 9.5-pound boy. Caswell and I left the meeting and stopped for a pizza and beer to get the taste of the apricot peekaboo cookies out of our mouths.
Well, there you are, Dr. Holloway. They adopted our bylaws with only one dissenting vote.
I don't like that secretary. She's a spoiler, always suspicious. My first wife was like that.
Don't worry, she hasn't got a chance. That Bernice woman has clear sailing under my equations. It's rigged to favor an aggressive extrovert over the paranoidal personality.
You're sure it'll work now?
I'd stake my academic reputation on it.
You have.
Don't worry, Dr. Holloway. We've given that sewing circle more growth drives than the Roman Empire.
We let the whole thing gel for a while. About 4 months later, I shook loose from my schedule and dropped over to see Caswell. He looked up from a student paper on the correlation of Bermuda shorts seen at Madison Avenue and 46th Street to the swing towards Democratic candidates in the Corn Belt.
Ah, good morning, Dr. Holloway. Good morning.
Caswell, I just wanted you to know we hadn't forgotten you. Now, about that sewing club business, I'm beginning to feel the suspense. Could I get an advance report on how it's coming?
Well, I haven't been following it that closely. We're supposed to let it run the full 6 months and then check.
But I'm curious. Could I get in touch with that woman? What's her name? Bernice something?
Hackett. Bernice Hackett.
Would it change the results if we checked it now?
Not in the slightest. If you want to graph the membership rise, it should be going up in a long curve. Probably doubling ever so often.
Well, if it's not rising, you're fired, you know.
If it's not rising, you won't have to fire me. I'll burn my books and shoot myself.
I went back to my office and put in a call to Watershaw. Mrs. Hackett wasn't in. The maid informed me she was at the meeting. That sounded better. If the sewing circle was meeting on a Saturday, then maybe Caswell had a chance. But she wasn't going to a sewing circle meeting. There was another organization, the Civic Welfare League. I hung up the phone and thought about poor Caswell. If the sewing circle had really gone up the flue, he was on his way up with it. I decided to go over to Watershaw and check to give the poor old goat the benefit of the doubt. The meeting of the Welfare League was in the Knights of Columbus building, a tremendous pile used for dozens of club meetings at a time. There was some kind of political rally going on in the main hall. Streets were jammed, and I figured I was going to have a tough time finding the little back room where the Civic Welfare League was meeting.
I figured they must be in a pretty bad way trying to hold a meeting in competition with a brawl like the one in the main room.
Right this way,
look,
sir.
I'm looking for a small meeting.
Well, here you are. Membership application, song sheet, bylaws, and pledge.
No, you don't understand. I don't
want
to.
Well, that's all right. You can keep it. It's a new membership kit. Everyone's supposed to have it. We've just printed up 6,000 copies to make sure there'll be enough for this meeting.
No, you don't understand, miss. I'm looking for the meeting of the Civic Welfare League.
Well, this is it.
No, I mean the one with Mrs. Hackett. Bernice Hackett.
Do you know her? Well, there she is up on the speaker's platform.
And now, after the ushers have passed among you with membership blanks, it is time to rededicate ourselves to the principles we stand for. With a bright and glowing future, the best people in the best planned town in the country, the jewel of the United States, all we need is more members. Now get out there and recruit! Recruit! Recruit!
I cornered Bernice Hackett at the speaker's table. She had a clear, sparkling look to her eye, and she was dressed in a trim gray suit with a towering feather on a small hat. A clutch of pretty junior ushers, all with goose pimples showing above strapless formals, clustered about her. I managed to get to see her in the back room while the mayor was addressing the meeting.
Well, hello there. It's a pleasure to see you.
What's happened to the sewing circle?
Oh, it's just a little change, that's all. Helen, dear.
Yes, B.H.
Send those wires out to the senator in Washington. You can tell him we want his support on the slum clearance or else.
Check.
And now let's see, where were we? Oh, yes. We started growing by amalgamating with other small charity groups. Work much more efficiently that way.
Bernice, we're running out of membership blanks.
Call the printer. He's got instructions to keep the type standing.
Check.
Naturally, we had to change our name each time. But we've still got the same constitution and bylaws as the ones you professors worked out for us.
Then you've been growing.
Oh, dear, yes.
Bernice, what do we do about the town board of aldermen?
I explained to them they can't get in at a group rate. Each one will have to join separately.
Check.
Oh, yes, Professor. We're growing and growing and growing.
I kept close watch on the sewing of the Civic Welfare League for the rest of the month. Evidently, they'd swallowed up the real estate organization because they came out with a plan to attract new industries to town, and there was a gimmick splitting up the profits among club members only. It was the same provision Caswell built in to split up profits from dues and fines, but now it was operating in the 100,000s. I graphed the rise in membership, and it went up like the first rise in a roller coaster. I went over to Caswell's office to tell him the good news.
Naturally, I knew the equations would work.
Well, don't be so calm about it. With a demonstration like this, I can get all kinds of grants and funds for the sociology department. You'll think it's snowing money.
Well, naturally, I expected this. I haven't been following the test at all, but I was quite confident.
I don't mind admitting I wasn't. Well, that organization sure blew up. Now, let's see the formula for stopping it.
Oh, I didn't complicate the organization with negatives. I wanted it to grow. It falls apart naturally when it stops growing for more than 2 months. You remember, we built into it the idea that the members know what happens if the membership stops growing. Why, if I tried to stop it now, they'd cut my throat.
Yeah, they sure were enthusiastic at that meeting.
No, we'll just let it play out to the end of its tether and die of old age.
And when will that be?
Well, it can't go past the female population of the town. There are only so many women in Watershaw, and some of them don't like sewing.
Sewing? Caswell!
What's the matter? Are you sick?
You haven't been following the experiment?
Why, no. I told you, I haven't even thought about it since we started.
Well, they wanted to expand, and they weren't going to let sewing stand in their way. They went from general charity to social welfare schemes to something that's pretty close to an incorporated government. They're now filing an application to change their name to the Civic Property Pool and Social Dividend Membership Combine.
Well, very interesting. I hadn't thought of that. Fascinating.
Dr. Caswell, tell me, where? Where does the formula say it will stop?
Oh, I shouldn't worry. It stops when you run out of people to join it. After all, there are only so many people in Watershaw. It's a pretty small town.
Yes, it is. Doctor, they've opened a branch office in New York. Caswell got out his slide rule then, and we went over the charts I had been keeping. He ran the results through the physics department's new analog computer to check the results.
Uh-huh. Yes, it checks.
Well?
Well, now, allowing a certain lag of contagion from one nation to another, language and cultural barriers, you know, it will reach total world population in 12 years. About 1 week after that, various isolated pockets of Australian Bushmen, Tibetans, African pygmies will all be members.
You mean only 12 years?
Give or take a week, 12 years.
The whole world?
Well, there is something to be said for a worldwide government. Many people are definitely in favor of it.
But under Bernice Hackett, the whole world?
Oh, you asked me for a demonstration. The equation works.
But what happens when the whole world is organized and there are no new members?
Well, 2 months after the organization stops growing, it collapses. It's built in the formula.
Yes, but what happens then?
Oh. Well, I haven't the faintest idea. I haven't carried the equations that far.
Look, Caswell, whatever happens, I don't want anyone to ever pin this on me. From now on, if anyone asks me, I never heard of Watershaw. Well, that was 12 years ago. I think Caswell and I are about the only men on Earth who don't hold membership cards in the United Terrestrial Civic Welfare and International Property Pool. Bernice Hackett, Global Administrator. It's a race against time now. There hasn't been a new member in a week and a half, and Bernice is anxiously awaiting news from the first Mars expeditionary fleet. And as she says, if only they find life there, we need new members desperately.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine.
X-1, on Tuned to Yesterday from August 14, 1956 on NBC. Writer Catherine McLean's first of two stories heard on the series. The next would be in October of 1956, called Pictures Don't Lie. And we hope pictures were better in your theater of the mind on this edition of Tune to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Lepionier. It's been a pleasure.